6, discussion and possible action on residential ground lease form for possible, for Possum Kingdom real property. Roy Lee.
If I can, what I'd like to do is I'd like to introduce two council that we have here today that are outside council to talk about the lease. One is Howard Rogers with the firm of Canny Hanger. Mr. Rogers is the gentleman who actually drafted the original lease form. We also have Tally Williams, who's an attorney at the law firm of Brenner and Golden Stewart Wolf. We asked that law firm to take the lease and to review it to determine whether it was reasonable, to see whether they had any suggestions to the lease so that we could ensure that we came up with a lease that reasonably represented a good relationship between a landlord and a lessee. With that, I'd like to start off and let Tally Williams begin our presentation today.
As Laura Lee mentioned, our law firm was hired to give the BRA input to the lease form from a completely third-party position. We went over the lease, and I was actually worked with staff on the lease comments that was provided by the Possum Kingdom residents. We narrowed down those issues to four main issues that we kept they kept repeating themselves, and we want to address those today. First one is the negotiation. Many of the residents came back to us with comments that this is perceived to be a one-sided lease. General rule of lease contracts is that the landlord is the one that establishes the terms of the lease. Reason being, it is the landlord's property. It's their property, and they are, by the lease, allowing the tenants to use that property, in this case, to build homes and recreate and enjoy the lake. In order to facilitate the volume of leases that the BRA is dealing with Possum Kingdom, which I understand is over 1,600, they need some type of standardization for the orderly process. They're trying to maintain consistency by using the form, and that's the reasoning behind going with the form lease and not having one-on-one negotiations with each tenant. If you'll move to the next slide, one of the other issues that came up repeatedly was the indemnity and liability insurance provisions. As we've heard some residents discuss, the reason for the indemnity provision is that lessee is obviously using the land that is owned by the BRA, and we thought that it's important for the lessee to be responsible for indemnifying the BRA if claims are brought as a result of the tenant's use of the property. The basis for that requirement is that you, the lessee, are in control of the property. And we are just asking that the tenant be responsible for property that they are in control of. Lastly, the liability insurance provision is a new requirement to the lease. The intent is to protect the tenant and the BRA in the event that there's a claim from a person that's injured on the lease premises during the term of the lease. And the reason for the policy, obviously, is to cover any claims that might be brought as a result of this. And I'm going to turn it over to Pollard Rogers to go over the other key issues that we addressed in the staff meeting.
Morning. Let me make a couple of general comments about the process that we have gone through in developing this lease form. As Laura Lee said, I've been involved from the beginning. I've been involved from the beginning, and I've had opportunity to work with the staff that have been before you all several times. If you set the lease, the existing lease form, next to the proposed new form, there are only two material differences. One of them is the length of the term, and the other is the rent methodology. Other than that, there is no material difference in these lease forms, and that was intentional. And so let's walk through the two major issues that were left. One is the lease term and the renewal of the lease term. Currently, it's a 20-year term with a 10-year renewal. The proposed lease form extends that by two-thirds to a 50-year lease term. The reason for the 50 years is a recognition, and this gets into the other issue, and that is the obligation or right of the BRA to renew leases consistent with their policy in the past. As a governmental entity, under the Constitution of the State of Texas, you are charged with the stewardship of public lands, in this case, Possum Kingdom Lake and the Brazos River, and to protect those lands. You are given authority to implement that under the Texas Water Code. And the Water Code says that you may sell that land, but first you have to determine that it's surplus. You don't need it. It's not necessary in order to protect the waters of Possum Kingdom or the Brazos River. It also says that you can lease property. And, in fact, that's what you've been doing over 50, 60 years. The issue with respect to renewing leases and the term of any individual lease is, by law, restricted because you are a governmental entity charged with protecting the waters of Possum Kingdom. Therefore, when you lease property, it has to be viewed from the standpoint, had you leased it for a lengthy term or renewed it, contractually obligated yourself to renew it in perpetuity such that, in essence, you've divested yourself of control. You have, in essence, sold the property. And that's where we try to be very careful. Find a term that, conservatively, we believe fits within the statutory framework as courts have interpreted it and the Attorney General. And that's how we came up with 50 years. The renewal aspect of this, basically, you cannot agree to perpetually renew this lease. If you do, the Attorney General will pay a visit to you. Now, with respect to the terms of renewal and dealing with improvements, I know there have been comments that suggest that that indicates a change in the BRA's policy on renewal. In essence, because you are addressing what happens to improvements at the end of the lease, that is saying, obviously, you're not going to renew it. And that is simply not the case with respect to this lease. There is nothing in this lease to give any indication that the BRA has changed its policy with respect to renewal of leases. The only caveat, which has always existed, is that you cannot agree in perpetuity to renew a lease. You cannot commit a future board to renew leases, and you cannot, in essence, divest yourself of control by agreeing to renewals in perpetuity. With that caveat, there is nothing in this lease. There is nothing in the strategic plan, long-term strategic plan, of the BRA that suggests that the renewal policy is changing. Next, improvements. The reason that we identified what happens to improvements, that we dealt specifically, came from our suggestions, because the existing lease was ambiguous. It really didn't address it. And what you certainly want for the benefit of the landlord or the lessee is certainty. You want to know what the terms are. And So we elected to address the issue by stating improvements belong to the lessee. They own the improvements. They're not the BRAs. The question is, and the ambiguity that existed in your existing lease is, in the event there is a termination, again, something that's always existed in these leases, the right, if there's a default, failure to pay rent, there's a termination. Expiration of the term, there's a termination. What happens to the improvements? There's a need for both parties to understand what happens. If you leave it to, if there's not a statement in the lease recognizing the agreement between the parties as to ownership, the courts could very well say the improvements belong to the landlord. So what we've done is address that. Improvements belong to the lessee. When the lease terminates, the lessee may remove the improvements. If they elect not to remove the improvements, they will be deemed abandoned. So there's certainty with respect to ownership. And we've already said this. Addressing this issue in no way is creating a position that the BRA is claiming improvements. So I think while this is the lease form is longer, there are more words, it's for good reason. The lease form that you've been operating under for the last 50 or 60 years was based on the use of that Possum Kingdom 50 or 60 years ago. That use has dramatically changed. The number of people, the investment. And so it's only good stewardship, it's only good business, the BRA, that the contracts they enter into with parties using the lake, using the lands around the lake, are consistent with that elevated use. And so what we try to do is be certain, address these issues. Don't leave it to ambiguity.
You want to take the questions over there?
No. Well, you can ask the question. So, right now the existing lease is 20 years with a 10-year option. Is there anything in the lease that says at the end of that 10-year option they have first right of refusal? So right now the maximum lease term that's out there is a 30-year lease. So a board, we maintain the 30-year lease term. A board, 2 years from now, or 10 years from now, or 20 years from now, could come in and say, we have decided that continuing the leasing of land at Possum Kingdom is not in our best interest, and we are no longer going to renew leases at the expiration of the existing terms. Is that correct?
You could do that, yes.
So by instituting a 50-year term, we are binding future boards for an additional 20 years.
Absolutely.
Okay.
What I'd like to do is actually put the lease form up on the board. Got it. Thanks. What I want to do is we did appreciate the comments that we received from the lessees. We received a lot of comments. Staff sat down and we read through every page and every comment. I'll be candid with you, we're not able to incorporate every change, but we did try to, we were not able to incorporate every change, but certainly made an effort to make some changes to this lease document to make it more equitable and more reasonable for the lessees. What I'd like to do now is, if I can, walk through these proposed changes that the staff has made, understanding that some of these certainly will decrease our position, if you will, or increase the position of the lessees. But we feel like, from a staff perspective, these are equitable changes. The first thing I'd like to address is Section 2.1. It was recommended that we delete the words prior notice or demand from the last sentence. We went ahead and made this change. The reason we did that was we felt like we needed to clarify the terms and avoid conflict in the lease language because there are provisions in other areas of the lease that do require prior notice. So that's a clarification. Section 2.2, late fees and finance charges on past due payments. We had a number of comments from lessees about the fact that the 18% was just too high and was unreasonable. We took that into consideration and agreed. I think there was a suggestion by one of the lessees that 10% seemed to be more reasonable, so we adopted that recommendation, and we recommend implementation of a 10% versus an 18% fee. Section 2.4 rent. We restructured the language of this paragraph to clarify that taxes and insurance premiums are only considered additional rent when they're paid by the lessor. There's another provision in the lease that if the lessee neglects to pay their taxes, the authority has the ability to go in and make that payment. And if that were to happen, then it would be considered an additional rent. So this was to clarify this section to make it consistent with the other provisions. Section 4.1, permitted uses. We added the term project area in that last sentence relating to the public's right to pass through the property, in an effort to clarify that we were not trying to give the public the right to pass through the entirety of the leasehold estate. It's not our intent that the public can pass through the property you have under lease. All we're trying to do is make sure that we're compliant with the requirements of FERC, and FERC only ties into us in the project area, so we thought it was reasonable to add that language for clarification purposes. Next, we've got Section 4.3, alteration of the land, and we added language to authorize tree maintenance without the necessity of you know, getting a prior written authorization. If people want to prune their trees, they ought to be able to prune their trees. So we made that change to the lease. Next is Section 4.4. We had a lot of comments about signs and banners. You know, we had people ask us, can I fly a flag if I want to fly a flag? Can I put out, you know, a sign for my son who plays on the high school football team, whatever that is? And at the end of the day, it was really helpful that those comments came forward, because it really made us stop and evaluate our enforcement in the sign area, and it was determined that staff was going to recommend abandoning that tight regulation of signage and let people put, you know, signs up on the properties without that level of control. And so, frankly, we took that entire section out, and we anticipate amending the shoreline management guide consistently with that. Next is Section
4. Well, really, I have a question there.
Yes, sir.
By deleting that fact, does that mean somebody can put a 75-foot-high billboard on?
I mean, arguably, there's not a limitation except for the fact that there is a prohibition against subleasing, and arguably, if it was a monetary billboard for profit, that would be viewed as a sublease. So I think billboards would be out of the question. If they wanted to put up a big sign that was personal, they could arguably do that, but they couldn't sublease for profit.
Okay.
Next, Section 4.5, prohibited activities. We deleted the term soil and instead substituted the term reasonable to describe the standard for lessor's discretion in evaluating prohibited actions. I mean, this holds us to a standard of being reasonable rather than saying we can be completely autonomous in what we decide, and we felt like that was a reasonable choice. Next, Section 4.7, lessor's use. We added language to clearly provide that lessor will, quote, repair any damage or compensate the lessee for such damage it causes, end quote. The term substantial was deleted as a modifier to damage, and we included the, quote, compensation language in addition to repair for, you know, language relating to this position. The intent of this was that if the BRA goes on the property and causes a damage, irrespective of whether it's substantial or not, we have an obligation to fix it or pay for it. And so we believe that's the right thing to do, and we made that change as well. Section 6.2, utilities. There was a standard in that section of gross negligence. We agree with comments by the, you know, by the lessees. It really ought to just be negligence. So we changed that to struck gross and just have it at negligence. Next, Section 6.3, it is now entitled wastewater treatment system. We deleted references and requirements relating to potable water systems and limited this provision to wastewater treatment systems. The fact of the matter is, we felt like from the staff perspective, there was a logic. I mean, requiring wastewater treatment system benefits us in terms of protecting water quality for the lake, and that's important. There's a legitimate environmental reason why we'd want to do that. As far as requiring individuals to tie into potable water system, we felt like at the end of the day, based on the lessee's arguments, that really is more in their discretion. If they decide that they don't want that water system in their house, so be it. But we really felt like the wastewater was important, and we should leave that provision. So we modified this section to delete the references to the water system. Yes, sir.
That implies that leaving the lessee to make a decision whether on well water or on provided water. My question is, in certain areas of Texas, currently have a deadline to be off the ground lease. Is there any such provision or any areas in the PK area that have any plan
not at this juncture,
to be off the ground
lease? Most of the areas that are under subsidence district regulations are down by the coast, by Houston.
So there's
none up there. We don't see those sort of regulations
up
there, no, sir. Next would be section 6.4, maintenance repairs. We deleted the reference to first class and set the standards for maintenance repairs as, quote, clean and neat condition and repair. For obvious reasons, we don't need to, in our opinion, staff's position, demand that people have things in a first class condition. So we made that change. Yes, ma'am.
I will use the sole discretion in the sentence, next to the last sentence.
Yeah.
But reason, some more reference to reasonable would be more appropriate.
I can tell you why we debated as we went through the lease. Candidly, most of the lessees said, you know, the sole discretion is pretty painful. Please try to be reasonable. And in a lot of areas, we agreed with it. The reason that we left sole here intentionally was we felt like at the end of the day, from an enforcement standpoint, that it was better to be candid with the lessees and let them know that when it comes to determining the maintenance from repairs, really, the BRA, at least from the staff perspective, felt like it was important that we could make that determination because there's public health safety and issues, you know, that relate to that. So that was at least the staff's recommendation. But you're right, that was an issue raised by many lessees. And we're certainly up to, you know, consideration if the board would want to make that change. But we left it in there from my understanding. And I'll kind of defer to maybe a little bit to Kent and the staff because it really wasn't as much a legal issue as it was an enforcement issue. My understanding was that staff said, you know, this is an area where we feel like we really need to have this control or the ability to articulate what our position is. So they recommended that we leave Sol in that situation. I'll try to talk louder.
I don't mind so much the sole discretion, but I would like some reasonable reference to reasonable in there somewhere.
Okay, I mean, that's something that if the board wants to recommend that when y'all adopt the lease, we can gladly do that. The next section we have is section 8.1, lessees insurance. Section A, we clarify the type of insurance required by providing, quote, either by a Texas standard homeowners form policy or other form of comprehensive personal liability policy. In addition, under Section B, we clarify the type of documentation required to establish insurance coverage by including the term certificate of insurance. Under the prior language, it looked as though you'd have to provide an entire policy, and that was not the intent. So those were more of just correction of language changes. Under Section 9.1, lease assignment, this was a pretty substantive section in my mind. We had a number of comments about a concern about the ability to assign. We modified the language relating to the ability of the lessee to assign the lease without the lessor's prior written consent. We changed the language from, quote, at the lessor's sole discretion to, quote, such consent shall not be unreasonably withheld. This is a big deal. But we felt like it was, you know, the right thing to do in light of all the comments. Next, section 9.3, lessor assignment. We clarify the types of documentation that would be required by deleting, quote, and certificates, which was broad, could mean just about anything, and added, quote, estoppel letters and or subordination, non-disturbance, and attornment agreements. It's our understanding from conversing with outside counsel that those are the type of documents that we would need in the event of an assignment, so we changed that to clarify the language. Next section is 12.1, event of default. Section B, we deleted, quote, in its sole judgment as it relates to compliance with the terms, provisions, or conditions of this lease, and that's pretty substantive. Next is section 12.2, lessor's remedies. We deleted, quote, subject to lessor's lien to secure payment of annual rent, additional rent, or other payments due, end quote. As we've deleted references to lessor's liens and other provisions, we took this language out here. Under this lease, we are not attempting to have the right to place a lien on the improvements on the property. And so we made that consistent throughout the body of the lease. Section 12.4, attorney's fees. We deleted the provision, quote, in the event of a bankruptcy proceeding wherein lessee is a debtor, lessee shall be additionally liable for all reasonable attorney's fees and expenses incurred by lessor in any such bankruptcy proceeding. We went ahead and took that out at the request of lessees. Under Section 14.1, Rights and Obligations Upon Casualty, we extended the time to remove or restore damaged improvements. It was 12 months. We changed it to 24. We came up with 24 because that was a number of months suggested by one of the lessees in their comments. In addition, we want to emphasize the fact that it is remove or restore. There is no requirement in this lease that lessees have to rebuild. In the event of a casualty or a destruction of the improvements, if they do not want to rebuild, if they want to take their money and invest somewhere else, they can do that. They just need to restore the surface estate. They need to get it. There's, for example, if a home were to burn and there's like a burned out hulk, they would need to have that lowered and have the, you know, the surface of that property restored. And that's what, you know, that's what the requirement is there, and we increased it to the 24 months. Next is Section 14.2, Plans and Specifications for Altered Improvements. We added the language, quote, excluding routine maintenance, end quote, to clarify when you have to have, you know, what is excluded from being considered as altering improvements. You can conduct routine maintenance and not have it trigger this provision. Section 15.1, Construction of Improvements. Once again, we deleted the term first-class materials and supplies. We took the first class out. And so what we resulted in is that the construction of improvements needs to be done in a good and workmanlike manner. We felt like that was a more equitable method to determine how, you know, construction should be done for the lessee, so we recommended making that change as well. Section 15.2, Mobile Homes. We had comments from several of the lessees regarding what if I have an existing manufactured home on my property, do I have to come back and get permission again, or am I okay with the permission that I've already gotten? So we wanted to clarify that. We added a provision that basically said improvements previously approved in writing by the lessor are not required to obtain any further consent. So that's in there for the protection and comfort of those folks that have already got manufactured houses on the properties. Next is Section 15.3, Ownership of Improvements and Removal. We removed the language providing that, quote, if lessee fails to remove improvements in addition to all of the remedies available to lessor, lessor may, at its option, remove the improvements and otherwise return the lease premises to its original condition at lessee's cost as permitted under paragraph 12.2A. This section applies to termination of the lease rather than default. Under a default, that language is still in there. The concept being that at the natural expiration of the lease at some point out in the future, that if that were to happen, we would not build back, so to speak, removal of those improvements against the lessees. However, in the event of a default, there would be that right. So it distinguishes those two sections. Next is Section 16.1, Lessor's Lien. Once again, as I said earlier, we deleted this entire section. It's not our intent to get a lien on improvements. Those are owned by the lessee, and in the event of a default, we would fall under general default provisions. So we took that out in its entirety. Next is Section 17.1, Notice. This was another good suggestion. One of the lessees pointed out that you don't have the term business days in. Can we clarify that? We added business to, you know, the modified days, so it's clear how much time you need for notice. Section 19.5, Successors and Assigns. We added a reference to Article 9 to clarify the location of those terms that specifically deal with lease assignment to make it an easier read. And in Section 19.3, this was a pretty huge one. There was a real outcry about the issue of the waiver of jury trial. Staff recommends going ahead and deleting that provision and taking it out and allowing people to have a jury trial if they so desire. With that said, I think that's a summary of all the provisions that we, from a staff perspective, recommend changing or modifying in the lease terms.
The other slide? Or is that the next? Oh, this is the slide that's back to the PowerPoint presentation. Just one second, I think. What I'm going to discuss here in a second, I think the slide up there is just a single slide that discusses the 65 and over and homestead exemption that currently that we utilize pursuant to the board policy that has been adopted prior. And I was going to discuss the sort of what the financial impact of that discount is.
John, let me ask, if that's not in the existing lease, it's an existing policy of the board?
That's right. It's a policy of the board. It is not in the existing lease, and it's not in this proposed lease. Laura Lee might confirm that. I'm pretty sure that's correct.
It's
just a board policy.
But it's a firm board policy.
Yes, sir. It's the policy in the previous methodology that we're currently under, the current methodology that we're under right now.
So we're answering the gentleman's complaint. This has not anything to do with the lease we're discussing right now.
That's correct. It's not in the lease document.
There was a specific resolution passed by the board granting the discount. So the resolution doesn't stop. The way the resolution is drafted is, and I don't have the exact language in front of me, but basically it says that as to the residential lessees who are 65 or older and are homesteaded, they will receive a 10% discount off of their lease. And so arguably, unless there is some board action to make that go away, that resolution stands, and we would still be under the 10%.
So the information is purely information right now. It is not a matter of discussion or the resolution or the lease.
Yes, sir. It's already in place.
Yes, the purpose of this slide really is just to show what the financial impact is of the current policy. And you can see that we get this information from the county appraisal district and use what they qualify as a lessee who would be 65 years of age or older and a homestead. They have to meet both of the criteria. And then they receive a 10% discount. Currently, the latest information of the 2006 appraisal district information indicates that there's 128 lessees that qualify for that are both over 65 and over and a homestead, out of about 1,576 total lessees that we have. And that number has stayed fairly consistent over the last several years. It obviously goes up and down a little bit. Trey, you said it was 120, 121 or 120 or so last year before last, so it's gone up a little bit.
And Cheryl, what was the total number of homesteads? You told me 200 something.
Homesteads right here are 250.
Right.
Okay. So there's 250 total homesteads, but only 100, about a half of them are 65 or older. So gives you an idea. The last bullet is what the estimated amount of that discount would be under the new methodology. And this is if all 128 of these lessees were to adopt the new discounted methodology that has been proposed or has been approved by the board, it would be a total discount for all of them, $18,000, or approximately $140 on average per lessee. Obviously, that vary per lessee based on the amount of their lease. So that gives you an idea. Currently, the amount under the current lease is less than that. The total discount amount is less because obviously the lease values are less and stuff. But this is what it would be under the new methodology if everyone was to if all 128 were to migrate to that. Yes, sir.
Just a clarification.
Yes.
Someone 55 years old signs the lease today, the 50-year lease. 10 years from now, he gets a 10% discount.
That would be correct. You're saying
if it's a homestead.
We base it on how
you would get the discount.
Right.
Okay.
We base it on what the county. We go by what the county basically tells us in their tax rolls.
I understand.
Has there been any discussion in the past in regards to a discount specifically for those under homestead exemptions and then an additional discount for those 65 and older?
There probably has, but I'm not sure if there's been discussion on that specific proposal. We've talked about a lot of different approaches to this. But
wait, I can answer that. There has been, six, 7 years ago, I think there was discussion to that point that should there be a homestead exemption? But it didn't go anywhere with that board.
Was your
permission, I'd like to ask that that be included on my next committee agenda to look at that.
Sure. Any questions, John? I'd ask the board to Phil.
So we're going to put the experts up here where they can interact with to answer any questions from the board. Nice for this one that carries a briefcase.
We've heard several comments this morning from SE. We've heard them for a number of months about proposed changes of the lessee to the rates, some of the methodology used. We've had a presentation here today. I'd like to have open up now comments from the board, those of you all who wish to have a comment on the record, ask a question, or general discussion.
I have a comment. a couple of meetings ago, a request was made similar to the one that was made today about meeting with the leasees, and at that time I suggested it might be a good idea to do it. We now have a final presentation here, and I heard this morning a request to have additional discussions. I don't know who we'd discuss it with, but I guess they can get some representatives. But I think we should seriously consider their request. You now have something here for them to look at. And now how we would arrange that, we would do it. I don't know if the Possum Kingdom Committee could do that or what, but I think we should seriously consider that. And it would take a little bit of time, and the suggestion was made to delay, I forget what the time period was, but I think we should consider their request. I favored it when I made the comment, forget when it was, several meetings ago. I just think that it's a two-sided deal here. We're kind of in a hard spot here. I know we're not going to please everybody, but I think we should go the extra mile to show our intent and our interest in the well-being of everybody.
Thank you, Rudy.
Can I expand on that just a little bit? I'm not opposed to that at all either. The only thing is that there are certain issues that, as a board, we all need to understand. There are certain things that are just non-negotiable.
Right.
The biggest thing that I have heard from the lessees is that they are not happy with the 50-year term, but they want an extension. They want some assurance. They want some level of comfort that at the end of that term, they're going to be the first in line to get their lease renewed. And I understand that concern, but the other end of the spectrum is our attorneys have said 50 years is as far as you can go. We are, in essence, binding future boards an additional 20 years. So I think there needs to be certain things from this board before we go into an open discussion with 1,500 lessees, that there are issues that we have discussed with our council, and there are issues that are not on the table for discussion. And one of those, I think, needs to be the lease term. And I don't care whether it's 30 years with 2-10-year options or 40 years, but we need to determine what that is, because it puts us at odds with what our legal counsel is advising us and what the folks up there want. And honestly, I don't see a resolution to that issue.
One comment.
Wait, are you through with?
Yeah.
Okay. I have two things I wanted to address. Number one was what you just said. It appears to me, based on everything that I've read and listening to our attorneys, that they go past the 50-year term, because it originally started out with a 99-year term, mm-hmm. if I remember. To go past the 50-year term would require a change of the Texas Constitution and a change of state law. It's not in our hands, is my point. The second thing I wanted to comment on was that there were some mentions about the fact that the lease referenced other documents with other requirements, like our shoreline and everything. I can assure you every lease, residential lease in Texas, refers to the covenants and restrictions of the neighborhood where you're at. This is not unusual. It's standard.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just, before we, as a board, said, let's give it more time and let's discuss with these people the lease, we need to have parameters. If that conversation comes up here today, I want to know that there are parameters, because there are certain issues that, in my mind, at looking at this lease, on advice of counsel, are non-negotiable.
Yeah. Right.
So if we go to the table with them and they think everything is open, the minute we say, no, we're not going to discuss this, or no, we're not going to discuss that, then we're not listening, and we're right back where we are today, yesterday, 2 years ago. So
5 years,
as,
8 years
ago. As a board, we need to, if we walk away from here today saying, let's put it out there for future discussion, I think we need to have some parameters on it.
My personal opinion is we don't.
I just think that there are certain things in this lease that we need to say. We, as the lessor, have the right to say this is a non-negotiable issue. We will be happy to discuss the other items, but A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, however you want to word it, are not part of the future conversation.
Mr. Truman.
I really have tried to listen carefully to all the input from the staff and read all the information we got from the leasees. And I listened very carefully to what we were told this morning. But what I did not hear and still did not hear is anything new that I believe this board can deal with. I think it does fall under some unhappy circumstances. They're going to be there when you change things. And we're going to, by definition, change when we do this. I think the staff has done a good job. They've listened. They've come back to us with suggested modifications that fit a great deal of what the leasees asked for that we're allowed to do. I don't see anything left on the table to go meet again for, nor do I think another 90 days would be productive. I think there would be a lot of decibels exchanged. It would not be productive, and I don't, for one, want to see us do that. I think we have a document before us today, and I think we ought to vote it up or down.
Wally, I had a question. As our legal counsel, is there any reason why we can't proceed today voting on this lease?
Director Baker, I can't think of a specific statutory reason why you can't move forward or a legal reason why you can't move forward. We've had numerous lawsuits threatened. I mean, y'all saw the letters we have, and it is what it is. But as far as a specific legal reason, I don't have one.
Okay. Martha, did you, for you, I know, Jane, you had your hand up.
Okay. I realize what a tremendous issue this is, and I think part of the problem stems from the fact that so many people, even the lessees, don't understand leasehold and versus fee simple, or perhaps they understand it in their minds but not in their hearts and their emotions. I have looked at the lease, and I really appreciate the input from the people at Papa Kingdom, because I agree with them in most instances, those changes that we have made. But I think this is a good lease agreement. And I know that the insurance question was a concern, but that protects the leasee as well. So I agree that I just don't see what other new concerns can be raised by allowing more time. And it's I would like to go ahead and address the issue today.
Martha, I think
I'm
sorry.
I guess it was Nick Bray brought up the indemnity. Did you look over the handout that he gave us? You know, not being a lawyer, need a little help with this. Is the way the current draft written, is it as broad as what he said that we should refine it and try to limit it to?
Indemnity is always very difficult to try and cover every particular circumstance where it might be applicable. And the example he gave, of course, one would think, why should that indemnity kick in if someone who is not invited to come over to the lease premises just decides they are and they have an accident? The indemnity covers actions by the lessee, their family, their invitees, contractors. And the other example I would give, which is not to suggest that it's not a broad question, but just to give perspective to it, is if there is an invitee, and this is the example I keep thinking about, a family has come to spend the afternoon, and someone gets out on a float 5 feet off the dock, they're in the lake, where does the responsibility stop? And I think at the end of the day, the idea is that what we want to do is shift the responsibility to the lessee's insurance company. So there's no question. There doesn't have to be an argument. Is there room to clarify or modify the indemnity? There always is. And I think we've talked about it to make sure that it's not overly broad, but also that it doesn't unnecessarily put potential liability on the Brazos River Authority if there is an accident. So that would be my response.
Bob, you hit it.
Yes, I did. I agree with a lot of people saying we spend a lot of time and the staff has to reviewing this, taking all the comments from the people from Possum Kingdom. I think the staff done an excellent job incorporating a lot of the comments and everything else. I think the main thing they're objecting to or question is the term of the lease and the price. We took Slawbach's recommendation and we didn't agree with it. It was too high. And our staff come up with a new price, a lower price. And I commend our staff for doing that. I think we just need to go ahead and resolve it today. I don't think we need to carry on. There's two issues that can't be changed, and that's the term of the lease and the rate of the lease. That's just two things that's not negotiable.
Suzanne?
I just had a question about your discussion about the remover of the section 4.4 of the signs. I could see how the signs would have a potential to get out of hand. Was there any discussion with limiting the size of signs? I would hate to see giant signs all over the lake, and we had no recourse. That would damage the lessee's property. It would damage the appearance of the lake. It would damage your neighbor if some neighbor decided to put this giant sign in their yard. It seems to me, as far as the signs, there should be something reasonable in there to limit people's ability to. I'm sure at this point they'd like to put up big signs saying we don't like BRA. You know, we try.
Yeah, okay.
So, I'm sure you all hate to do that, but anyway, was there any discussion about some kind of sign limitation? I really hate to see that whole thing removed from the lease.
This quarter, because there was quite a bit of sign. There was a great deal of and a great deal of passion mm-hmm. about if you can't leave it to the discretion to put I hate the BRA and 12-foot block letters up there. Or by the same token, somebody could put John 3:16 up there in 50-foot high letters, and then you get into another situation. The discussion was that we on the staff want it to appear reasonable. If the interpretation is that I can go put a 70-foot sign up there now and I'll show those turkeys, well, then that's going to happen anyway. So this was a calculated risk. And we think that this is a 95% solution. There's 5% that talks about signage. Again, that says that it can be 5 feet by three. We finally came up with a decision after I had 50% of the staff saying there should be nothing and 50% saying there ought to be a requirement there and we need to make them do this and we need to make them do that. And I said no. So this is subject for your interpretation to put a signage thing back in there, but the process went through was an attempt to do things that were right and to mediate the fury and the hatred that has been directed toward this organization. That was the long and the short of it.
I have a question on the signage like her. Let's make the assumption that we approve the lease like it is now. Just make that assumption for a second. And then make the assumption that signs proliferate. For instance, 4x8 sheets of plywood go up saying, we board dogs. We keep children. We do da-da-da-da-da. Or just general signs like you said, 3:16 or whatever, okay? We have standardized our lease, and we don't want to get into the position of having different versions of leases in the future. Okay. My question is, can the signage be addressed in the shoreline guide?
Yeah, I think that the signage is currently addressed in the shoreline management guide. We talked about a modification to make it track with lease if the intent is to, you know, to remove requirements. But certainly from time to time, whatever an implementation the board has of different rules in the shoreline management guide or the rules and regulations, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, but it's my understanding that under this lease, folks have to abide by those regulations. And as you say, frankly, it's contemplated that over time, rules and regulations change. So the details kind of goes into the guide.
That kind of makes this the correct decision to take it out of here, see how it goes, and if it becomes a problem, it can be addressed in the future without changing a lease.
Go ahead and answer.
I think you're correct. I think the big thing, the reason that we had talked about going in and amending the guide as well as to address the fact that because the outcry was so great, and there was a lot that y'all saw, I know y'all got the copy of the comments and kind of our responses, but there was such a great outcry about signage. At the end of the day, we said, we thought, we really don't need to enforce. The fact of the matter is the reason we made the change in the lease, we can stick with that and then decide as we get to the guide how much regulation is or is not appropriate for signage. And it may be that there's too much regulation as it exists today, or maybe that the language is good as it is today.
Correct, Baker. One reason I bring this up is the neighborhood I currently live in. You can't even put a for sale sign in front of your house. There is zero sanction.
I didn't want it to be a problem with no recourse for the delay.
Since that is a restriction and covenant in my neighborhood, it can be changed with the residents by voting.
That was a good suggestion.
Change this in the shoreline guide without bothering with the lease. I just thought that was a good way to approach it.
Good
suggestion. Yes, two things come to mind. As a lawyer, I'd like to say at the end of the day, this is still state property. And we are obligated to provide First Amendment protection, first of all, for folks who want to put up whatever they want to say. And number two, I predict at some point in time, I've been on this board now for 2.5 years, and I've been saying all the time, at some point in time, you all will decide to govern yourselves by incorporating or whatever you're going to do up there. And when you do that, I predict also you're going to wind up providing ordinances, protecting yourselves from signs and different things on your properties that would somehow diminish the value of your adjacent properties. I think that by removing it out of the lease, it allows a latitude at some point in time when you all decide to govern yourselves by some form of government, that you will then write your own laws to protect, ordinances to protect yourselves from among yourselves, if you wish. And I think that for that particular reason, taking restrictive verbiage out of the lease now allows you the latitude for future self-government up there.
Chris?
Director Becker, Director Moore, I think if you take a look, you have sign and banners, they're taking out section 4.4. If you look at the next section, 4.5, it can be used under that section to prohibit, you know, obnoxious signage, profanities, whatever. So I think that I've gone through this lease exhaustively in the past week. Under what Laura Lee has said earlier, you know, they didn't want to prohibit, you know, my kid plays football here or happy birthday or whatever. And I think that the signage thing is properly taken out, but it can be regulated per se under 4.5. So I think there is a section of the lease which can be used in such fashion. So I think there is a protection built in.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I've heard the comments. I agree with the consensus that if we don't move on today, we'll come back in 90 days or 45 days, whatever it is. We'll be right back where we are today with the same discussion, the same comments, with all due respect to those we've heard today and heard in the prior meetings, and we'll still be at the same impasse today. I agree with Director Gere. I think his committee's done an extraordinary job, along with the staff, in accommodating as many of the recommendations as we could possibly do. If we come back in 3 months, we'll still have another quantum number to deal with, and we'll still be where we are. So I move that we proceed with the resolution as prescribed, and we take a vote today.
I have one more question for you. On the 50-year lease, and if I have a 50-year lease and then decide to lease it to somebody else, and maybe it's in here and I just haven't seen it, does the new lessee have a 50-year lease?
I want to respond to that, I think. Okay, I'm going to look at you and see if I'm correct. Under the current policy, if a person is selling the property to someone else, selling the leasehold interest, okay, am I correct that in the event that there's a financing requirement, we do a new lease? Is that right? Okay, so.
Yes.
Standard
procedure is if the leasehold is selling the assigned for the remaining term of the lease, unless there's a financing requirement.
Unless it's what?
A financing requirement. So if the lender requests that they have the entire term, which would be the 50 years, then in that event, the new person would get a new 50-year lease.
Would that encompass the then existing discounts?
Well, you'd have to be 65.
You'd have to be 65.
No, I mean the discounts.
We have a motion before the board, and we're discussing. I suggest that I second that motion, and anybody else wants to
move on. Okay, we've had a motion in a second for the discussion.
I have about two more things to discuss, at least questions to be asked that I think need to be answered before we move on to vote.
Go ahead and discuss.
Okay. 6.4, regarding maintenance and repairs. I really think there needs to be a reference to reasonable in there, where you're talking about mowing grass and taking care of yards and houses. Sole discretion makes it sound like it's too militaristic. I'm sorry, but I would really like to see some reference to reasonable approach to that. Any suggestions on where that could be? I'd appreciate
yes,
that.
Yes, I have a comment on that. Mutual discretion and reasonable has different interpretations in people's minds. For instance, I can cite a case where this one lady left wallflowers and weeds and Johnson grass, and she had 3-foot stuff all around her house, and that was her idea of beauty. And that was reasonable to her. But the local property association
had the exact same words in theirs that's here at the sole discretion of the architectural committee. And they came in and mowed the yard. Even though she owned the property, it was not a lessor lessee thing. And I think the language is entirely appropriate because you have no idea what the person living there is going to have in mind of what is reasonable.
The second point is in reference to, and this was in the old lease, and I just had a question as to why it was, talking about raising the lake level to 10-15, not being held responsible for flooding up structures and things. When the lake was originally built, BIA came and bought the land around in order to build the lake. I'm curious as to why there's a reference to raising it to up 15 feet. It's going to flood out a lot of structures. Why there would be no reference to buying those lands at that point? I mean, I don't know if it's a real consideration, but it is in that lease.
A hydrologist explains that whenever the lake was built, the logic behind the 15-foot raise is that one of these days the lake is going to silt in and to make an accommodation for that to happen, one. And then two, the second logic was that this is a water supply lake and the need in 2050 or 2060, whenever the population is doubled, in order to raise that, there may be that possibility. So that was a strictly looking for the future and looking for future events by the people that did that. And it was in the old lease.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the explanation that I got whenever I attempted in my own mind and attempted to answer that question for others.
I was just curious as to why. You know, when you originally built the lake, you buy the land. If it gets to the point where it's silted in, you need to have more water space storage. Why it wouldn't go that way again? If you're building new lakes, don't they do that too? Acquire the land where the new lake is going to go? See what I'm saying?
I mean, I think the issue is there's two things that this provision does, it seems to me. One is it gives you relief in the event of a huge flood. If there was ever a horrendous flooding event and the water rose to that level and took out properties, it exempts you from that liability because arguably there is a certain peril when you build a house next to water in the event of an extreme flood. So that's one thing that I think that section does. The other relates to this right at some point in the future to inundate to that level. Candidly, I just know from speaking with the folks up at PK that, and Kay helped me out, that provision's been in the lease since the 60s, early 60s. I truthfully don't know what the logic was at the time when they put it in. As Phil said, in talking with our hydrology folks, you know, we certainly saw the comments and asked, you know, what do y'all think about taking this out? And the response was that, you know, as stewards of the lake and ensuring the fact that you can meet water supply needs down the road, it is something that you have. It's how you've, you know, conducted business, and to give it up could substantially impair, you know, the authority's rights in the event you ever had extreme siltation. You had to raise the level of the lake. You might not raise it 15 feet. You might raise the lake a couple feet. I mean, I just don't know what will happen in the future, but that's probably the best answer I can give you. I don't know specifically what they were thinking about at the time when they initially put it in, but there's a long historical basis for having it.
And my last point is there's a lot of concern that I've heard from people out the lake that have a lease that has like 15 years left on it. They felt like it was a good lease when they signed it. They signed it in good faith. And now they have the opinion that the new lease reduces their rights as lessees, but yet they're basically being forced into signing it because they can't afford financially not to. And at that point, it gives me a lot of heartburn. They just can't afford not to do it because they'll be paying twice as much as they're going to be paying if they did sign it. So it just the.
Can you explain how it reduces the rights, though?
Well, that's what the opinion is of this. They feel like this is way more far-reaching than the original lease, you know, with insurance requirements and all this. Whether it's right or wrong or otherwise, that's the sentiment. and they feel like they're being forced into signing it. Maybe they don't understand it, hadn't had enough time to look at the final draft, but that's the way they feel, and that they're being forced into it because, you know, if you don't, you're going to be paying twice as much money, and nobody feels like they can do that. So that's just the last, you know.
If I cut it off with Mr. Moore, then I want one thing, if I may. They will have a few comments.
Go ahead,
Ben.
I was just going to make a comment about the insurance requirements. How many of you in here on a car? State of Texas requires you to have liability insurance before you're allowed to drive that car on the highway. And how many of you remember when that law went into effect?
Better speak up to the lady that I cannot hear you.
How many of you remember when that law went into effect? It was the same hue and outcry about what has insurance got to do with driver's license and car plates. But now it's an accepted fact of life. This is state land. These are the same kind of requirements that you have with your automobile every day that you deal with.
I go back to the time of Rudy, the time Burke was here on the earth. We've been here for a long time, and we've listened to this for many, many years. As I've said before, 8 years ago when Rudy was here, we were wrestling with this thing. So this thing has been around for a long time. I understand the concerns that everybody has. I've felt them for a long time, and I think there'll be concerns after whatever we do for a long time. Nothing in here, there's no guarantees in here on values. There is nothing that someone can point to 15 or 20 years ago. I would not be opposed to another 90-day extension for this one reason. There are certain things that would simply not be at all on the table. Obviously, the 50 years, that's really, we could just sit here and talk about it all day. That's law. That's not going to be here. I do think that the next 90 days would boil down to money. If nothing else, it's going to boil down to money. It's going to boil down to rates. And with that, I've got to say this. The Brazos River Authority is going to raise your lease rates. That is an absolute fact of life. Because we really, frankly, don't have a choice. We don't have a choice. We've been passing this decision, as hard as it is, on board after board after board. If you believe that we are as bad a guys as you have written letters about, that's your personal opinion. But I can tell you that every one of us have had to make some very, very hard decisions. I know the consensus here today is to let's go on with this, and that's fine. If that's going to be the final decision of this board, I'm not going to have any problem with it. But if there is enough consensus here to give it 90 more days, and I know what's going to be talked about, it's going to be money. It's not going to be anything else. It's going to be money and rates. Then I personally would be willing to support that. If, Mr. Land, under your association, there would be three or four folks designated, three or four folks here from the staff designated. Otherwise, everything else, I think we've pretty well done a good job at addressing your all's concerns. So, with that said, I'll call for the vote.
Resolution.
I'm sorry. Read the resolution, please.
The resolution of the board at this time. The following resolution is presented for consideration to the Board of Directors of the Brazos River Authority for adoption at its July 31st, 2006 meeting. Be it resolved that the Board of Directors of the Brazos River Authority hereby adopts a new Brazos River Authority Possum Kingdom Lake residential ground lease form presented to the Possum Kingdom Committee on July 10th, 2006 and July 31st, 2006. And I'm going to make a recommendation, really, as I look at the resolution. It really should say, presented to the Brazos River Authority Board of Directors on July 31st of 2006, because there have been modifications since the form on July 10th.
Yeah.
intent needs to be out of there. Subject to those modifications in the resolution, does your motion still stand, Chris?
Still stands, yes, sir.
Your second?
Yes.
Hold the board.
Chairman Pena?
No.
Director Bellion?
Yes.
Director Ellison?
Yes.
Director Adams?
Yes.
Director Baker?
Yes.
Director Blum?
Yes.
Director Butler?
Yes.
Director Chalmette?
Mr. Chairman, due to the time of my arrival, I will abstain.
Director Christian?
Yes.
Director DeFluitt?
Yes.
Director Garcia?
Abstain.
Director Beer?
Yes.
Director Hughes?
Yes.
Director Johnson?
Yes.
Director Kilgore?
Yes.
Director Martin?
No.
Director Moore?
Yes.
Director Skaggs?
No.
Director Zaccanino?
Yes.
Motion carried. It's time to take a 10-minute break.